Yo, 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 sources from the sofa. We are back after a little hiatus from everybody, 3 or 4 weeks. We are about to hit the NBA Finals, NHL Finals. We have 3 F1 races to cover. Jason took a trip to Indy for the Indy 500 with his family, look like, based on the pictures on IG. Looked pretty legit. What else we miss? We missed the Champions League final. That was epic this past weekend. An ass whooping of the ages. And just a lot to cover on every playoff run so far. So welcome, Jason and Aaron. Welcome back to the pod.
It's great to be back. I know the sources were out and about just wondering where the pod had been the past couple of weeks. There was a lot of sources saying Rome was not excited about me reporting on a month's worth of racing, you know, so there was a lot of racing content. Rome wasn't about that, but there was other sources out there just claiming just Rome's been a little lost because since the Lakers really went down, and Aaron and I kept telling him about the Thunder, we're just going to roll through everyone all the way to the finals. But I don't know. I mean, Aaron, you may have some different sources on this as well, too, where Rome's been. I mean, you once claimed you had sources on me wandering through the desert after the Bears lost in Arizona. So maybe Rome was taking that same retreat that I once took back in October.
Yeah, definitely. I heard from a source, you know, you gave him that promo code. He got 20% off on this retreat. Definitely needed it. Also, remember, we did have a lost episode that's no longer aired where we talked about the Lakers' defeat. Somehow that did not make the airwaves on this sources from Sofa Pod. So, I mean, Roma,
that's weird.
Basically, if it doesn't air, it doesn't exist in Rome's book. So, I mean, the Lakers are still maybe playing. I don't know.
All right. Congrats, guys. Congrats. All right, let's just jump to the NBA Finals then. Since last time we recorded, yes, Lakers lost in 5 games, I believe, to the Timberwolves. Timberwolves went on to take care of the Warriors in 5 games. Pretty epic run from Julius Randle, Anthony Edwards as well. The Thunder rolled over the Grizz, took care of the Nuggets in a grueling 7-game series. And then I think 3 of the 5 games were pretty close when they were playing the Timberwolves, but they just beat them to a pulp. And I think it was like, what, 3 or 4 games winning by 30 plus points. So far, they're on track of having like one of the five best, you know, overall, like when you look at differential and wins, win totals. They got SGA. He won the MVP for the year, led the league in scoring. It's one of those epic seasons in a long, long time, rivaling like the Warriors, the Lakers, the you know, the Bulls dynasty. So we'll see if this is the start of something new. On the other side, Pacers took care of the Cavs pretty handily, got some lucky bounces. Halliburton playing lights out. The whole team playing lights out. They won in 5 games. The Knicks took advantage of injured Jason Tatum. We didn't see that one coming, but they took care of the first 2 games, I think, right? Or at least the first game kind of upset them and kind of took the went out of their sails and kind of punched them right in the face. They took care of that in 6 games. And then both of those guys, Pacers, Knicks, faced off in the Eastern Conference Finals. Win 6, but Pacers outclassed them every bit of the way with a lot of defense, taking Cat out of position. And now we got Thunder, Pacers. I'm excited for this finals. It's pretty exciting. Two small market teams, but both teams play with like a really fast pace of play. They got some dynamic shooting guards. One's more of a shooting guard for a point guard, and then the other one's more of a passing point guard in Halliburton. So pretty fun. Recap on the whole playoff so far, Aaron or Jason?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to unpack here. I'd say where we definitely got wrong, and I'll say the Celtics, where we talked about coming out of the East, that should have been the lock going all the way through. And you mentioned those first 2 games against the Knicks, where just really outmatched, and then Tatum got hurt and it was pretty much over, and the Knicks were able to go through. The Pacers just been kind of cruising, you know, through the Bucks, through the Cavaliers, got to the Knicks. It was kind of competitive, but overall the Pacers were able to take that in six. And so, I mean, I will say that I was pretty hyped for the Pacers Knicks series as a wrestling fan, because WWE foreshadowed the Jalen Brunson Tyrese Halliburton showdown on SmackDown.
Did you send that on IG?
I think I sent it to you. Yeah. So it was about a year ago on SmackDown last summer. It was already giving you the spoiler right there. WWE's letting you know where it was going to be. And I really like Tyrese Halliburton. I think I'll like any really pro athlete that really embraces pro wrestling, especially when they're going to get it on the gimmick. And what I liked about Halliburton going into MSG is like, hey, I'll be the heel. I'll be the bad guy in this arena and really playing it up. And I think there's a little extra showmanship, especially with the old Reggie Miller choke sign, you know, in that game one, and add a little bit to it. So I would say, as much as I would love to tell you, and I'll always say that the NHL playoffs are always the best playoffs out there, and the NBA is kind of like, it's a chalk. I would say this is one of the most entertaining NBA playoffs in a really long time, and this is coming from a person that's not the biggest basketball fan, especially when it comes to, generally it's always chalk, but this has not been chalk on the Eastern Conference side of the ball, even though they've had some 4-1, 4-2 series. The games have been pretty competitive. The West, you know, I guess there was a little more some blowouts in some of the series, but when you looked at Thunder Nuggets and Nuggets Clippers, those were some great series early on. And then, Rome, I want to give you this credit, because I'll be a man of saying something. You talked in the Timberwolves, you know, the Timberwolves series. I think we were talking against the Lakers, and this was before the Lakers were beaten at that point. But Anthony Edwards in that series, you were talking about him being the face of the league. And I really think after beating the Lakers and taking down the Warriors, he was really on a run, I'll say, to be, I don't know if the face of the league, but the buzz around him, I think, was pretty exponential of being one of these guys. And I don't know if we're ever going to get a single face of the league like we had with Jordan and probably LeBron. But I will say, I want to give you credit where credit's due, that I think Anthony Edwards was basically systematically taking down the old guard in those first two rounds. I'll give you the pro wrestling equivalent at Rome. This was the 2008 era Randy Orton in WWE when he was going by the Legend Killer. All right. Anthony Edwards was taking down the legends. He took down LeBron. He was taking down Steph and Draymond. He was ready on his way. But you know what? He runs into another group of young guns there with the Thunder, who I believe Aaron and I have been saying all year, been above and beyond in the Western Conference. They were going to roll through. Did they need to face any adversity? It didn't look like it. And they're overwhelming favorites now going into the finals.
Aaron.
Yeah, I mean, recap, Eastern Conference, Rome, like you said, Indiana. Five games, they dismantled the Bucks. Damian Lillard got hurt there. Achilles. I mean, we saw two guys go out with Achilles, you know, possible future Hall of Famers, and both Lillard and Tatum going down. And then you've got Indiana getting Cleveland. Cleveland was banged up. A couple role guys were hurt in that series. Give them credit. Indiana took them out in five games. I didn't see that one coming. I thought Indiana could beat them. I thought that was going to be a seven-game series, but Indiana went in there and got it done. The Knicks, we talked about them barely escaping against Detroit. I mean, they won three games, I think, on the road in that series by like a total of 5 points. They go into the Celtics series, somehow win the series where they were down in four of the games that they won, basically, by 20 points. So, and they came back, obviously, and beat Indiana in another game. They're down 20 points. Kind of weird when you look at the Knicks, they're down 20 points. They start to wake up and play well. So, you know, good run for them. Thibodeau, good job. I mean, I'm hearing a lot of rumors back and forth on whether or not he's going to keep his job or not. The Knicks haven't been to an Eastern Conference Finals since, what, I believe, 2000 or 1999.
2000, yeah.
So, I mean, they had a good run, solid team, but they ran into a buzzsaw. I mean, Indiana's been the class of the East, really, in these playoffs. Boston, who we thought could get there, they had depth, and they started to lose all their depth. Porzingis had some kind of illness, respiratory, couldn't breathe. Tatum gets hurt. We later find out, I think Jaylen Brown was playing with a sprained MCL. I believe it was later revealed.
Yeah,
Holiday was playing at three quarters. no matter how much depth you got, if you start losing star players or they're banged up, it can come back and haunt you, especially against a deep team like Indiana. I mean, Cleveland was really deep, but Indiana, we've seen in these playoffs, they'll go 10, 11, 12 deep, and they just keep running. They don't stop. They just keep coming at you. And then you'll go to the West, OKC, four-game sweep of Memphis. You know, Ja Morant, he got hurt there in game three. Looked like Memphis was on their way. They were up 29 points. He gets hurt. Sales go out there, and they get blown out and get swept. Champions, Nuggets, classic seven-game series with the Clippers, like really Jason good, mentioned.
I don't even know then how they pushed it
then
to
they
seven.
Come back and go seven again. Aaron Gordon basically playing on one leg. I mean, he's got a grade two hamstring. No reason shoulder. To be playing, but went out there, gave it his best. So I was glad that OKC had beaten them because I just wanted teams – we got the final four teams that are the most healthiest, right?
Yeah.
We didn't want like Gordon and the Nuggets advancing. And then I think Minnesota would have beaten them just like they did the year before. So then you got the Thunder. We mentioned Edwards, great first two rounds. Even Julius Randle was great. And then they just OKC defensively, Rome, you've been talking about them. They're putting up historic numbers there, point differential, clutch games. They've been just blowing people out. They dismantled the Timberwolves in five. Really good game four there, which the Thunder won by 2 points there in Minnesota. But that pretty much sealed that series. They came back and closed it out and beat them by, 30-40 there in game five.
Yeah.
No energy from the T-Wolves. So, yeah, I mean, this NBA Finals we have, I think is the two best teams in the league. They're very similar to me, very evenly matched. They both can play 9, 10, 11 guys. Both have size, both have front court players that can score. It's going to be a really exciting NBA Finals matchup, Rome. I know we were talking about it. I think it's going to be the best Finals matchup we've had in at least a decade, if not in a while. This might be the best one. I think it's going to be a seven-game series.
Let's get back to that in a little bit because that's fucking wild right there. But just to restate your guys' sentiments with the playoffs, in the lost pod that, like, you know, that I can't recoup, I was talking about how, like, I was really digging this year's playoffs, man. The young teams are, like, really aggressive. They're really putting these old teams on notice. Like, you can't fuck with us. Dude, by all means, man, Detroit should have been in the second round facing the Knicks. So, Knicks barely got out, and it looked like the Knicks were just built just to beat the Celtics. And you've seen this, like, in the past where, like, teams are built to beat one team because you think that's going to be the last team standing. But the problem was, they had a team that matched up really well in the Pacers. And so there goes that matchup. It was just all about matchups, man. And that's the crazy part. You're right, man. If the Nuggets do pull out that victory against the Thunder and go on to the Western Conference Finals, Timberwolves are doing a gentleman's sweep as well on the opposite end. So, like, no doubt about that. The only thing I didn't like, Ant, in that final game, didn't really show up, man. Like, he looked 23. And, like, if he just develops, like, a mid-game, the NBA is going to be on notice, man. They're like, they got a lot of veterans there. He's on fire. He's on the rise up. There's not too many guys that are better than him, and he's really young. So I'm a big Ant-Man fan. So really, really digging that. But you're right. Thunder, Pacers, very similar. They're deep. They've been the two deepest teams in the playoffs. And I think that's been the difference. Everyone else is going, like, you know, 7-8, and they got guys down to 14 ready to play, ready to shoot. Pacers, they've had guys in almost every big victory just come up clutch, you know, knocking down three-pointers, getting big steals. Siakam's been clutch. I thought Halliburton should have won MVP for the Eastern Conference Finals, but, you know, really happy that Siakam got it as well. He's a really good player. But seven games, dude. That's what you think the finals are going to go to. What do you think about that, Jason?
I think it's a pretty crazy take considering Oklahoma City. I were a 9.5-point favorites here in, like, game one.
Game one, yeah.
I'm pretty sure that, you know, Oklahoma's overwhelming. I would say I had friends texting me saying, do the Pacers win a game? So I got people going on the opposite end of the spectrum.
Tell them to call me. I've got my wallet ready, man.
Okay. I think it's somewhere in the middle. I don't know if it goes seven. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes six. I think there's something special with Halliburton and this Pacers team. They're going to pull out a game. But I do think Oklahoma City's better. One thing I'll say about this finals I did see, too, the Thunder-Pacers NBA Finals is the first finals since the luxury tax has been an effect that neither team was paying the luxury tax.
Really?
So when you So when you talk about depth, these are two teams and organizations that, hey, we naturally grew everything here. We got the right free agents that made sense, that played within the role. But I mean, there could be a larger conversation. Maybe it's our post NBA finals show. You're talking about, like, do we need the super team formation anymore? Are we trying to get three stars to put together? Or is like, do I just need to find maybe a guy and you hit like a Halliburton, and then there's a 1B that's really good too, and then a lot of good B plus players like surrounding it. And when you look at the Thunder, I forgot how many draft picks they have, but I swear they have like 20 draft picks over the next like they 7 years or something like that. Yeah. So it's like, even when they begin losing guys here, you know, depending on how well they draft in these, you know, maybe late first round picks, but they're going to be able to let guys go that may be part of this core that they may pay, they may not pay, I don't know. But they're going to have assets to continue to build, whether they get more established players or they draft well and have that depth and keep churning. So you could, it could be the start of something special in OKC, because they may just be just churning through and having this, you know, well of talent for the next like 5 to 7 years, depending on how they build around. But I think when you look at the last couple NBA finals and where things are at, where probably the history of the NBA, NBA is most popular with dynasties. It's the Celtics, it's the Lakers, it's my Bulls. You know, it was the Lakers again. It was the Warriors. Like, the NBA thrives on dynasties. But if you look at the last 5-6 years, we got new champions, new teams popping up. And when you look at the depth of where this, you know, playoff field could have been, when you, Rome, you were right. Matchups, you know, are going to be so important here. You know, where the bracket lines up now could ultimately play into someone's favor. And we could have different teams going, you know, to the NBA finals where it was like, hey, it's not just a slam dunk. The Bulls are just pulling through everyone. It's going to be Bulls, whoever in the finals, or it's going to be Warriors, whoever in the finals, like it was, you know, 10 years ago. It's going to be very competitive, and depending on matchups here, potentially, because all these teams just have a different amount of depth that we're not used to.
Yeah. I mean, I think Jason touched on a key thing there. Like, do teams go out, get into the luxury tax, and try to create super teams? I mean, you got the Spurs who have the number 2 and the number 14th pick in the draft. You know, there's rumors about where Giannis may end up, but you start looking at the teams that are in the NBA finals now in OKC and Indiana, like Jason mentioned, they have 10 guys that can play, and not just guys they throw off the bench. Like, these guys all contribute and have a role, and they play that role good. And what happened with New York, what has been their downfall really all year? Tibbs only played 6-7 guys, and they ran out of
until
gas.
The end, yeah.
He tried to get some guys, Shaman and other guys, in there, and they gave him a little bit of a spark, and they got a game, but it was a little too late. You go back to Denver. What do we talk about Joker? I mean, Denver had the best starting five statistically, numbers-wise, of any team in the NBA, but they had no 6, 7, 8 outside of Russell Westbrook. So we're seeing now, if you can kind of build in through the draft, keep those players, develop them, pin them in the G League, maybe just, you know, gradually get on more minutes as the years go on, and then add a key player like a Siakam in a free agency, you can make some moves. I mean, Miles Turner's been there 10 years. Halliburton, they traded for with your Keens there, Rome.
Yeah.
For Sabonis, which was a good trade for both teams at the time.
For both teams, yeah.
Keens got to the playoffs. The Pacers now have been going up. The difference is the Pacers have built around Halliburton. You know, the Keens have not built around Sabonis. Got rid of Fox and other guys. So I think depth-wise, staying under that number, keeping draft picks. I mean, I've always valued NBA picks. The Celtics really did it that way of Ainge. Remember, there was always talked about, is he going to trade for AD or not? He kept Brown. He kept Tatum. Everybody said that window closed. They ended up getting a title. We all thought they would get back there again, but injuries happened as part of the game. Dynasties have always been the NBA thing. We know Adam Silver's trying to kind of get rid of that with the new CBA and kind of non-dynasties. I agree with you guys. Dynasties are better than the NBA. I want to see a team win 2 out of 3, 3 out of 5, whatever it is. We have the Bulls, Lakers, Spurs, Warriors, Lakers again in there. And then a couple teams have mixed in here. But, you know, you had Dallas win one, Denver win one in here, Detroit's won one. The Bad Boys won a couple in the late 80s. But dynasties are the name of the game, and maybe OKC has that chance. We'll see.
Yeah, they're no uniquely set up, so they could keep on drafting, but they're definitely gonna hit the tax and what if not next year, the year after that, because they have a few guys that they're gonna want to keep. Jalen, SGA's contract kicks in, and you know, Chet, I imagine he's going to get a contract as well, but pretty unique, really smart front offices. Yeah, I think the days of just going after one superstar might be done. You have to kind of build around the team culture first and then go that route. But Thunder Pacers, man, I'm really looking forward to it. Game one is on Thursday, 5:30. I'm going to go on record. I'm just going to pick Thunder in six games. Jason?
I'm going to agree with you on that. Thunder in six.
Okay.
Seven-game series, I'll go Thunder in seven.
Seven games. That's that would be wild. It's possible, though, I guess.
And lock it in. Pacers cover 9.5 game one.
Really?
Yeah, they'll cover it. Might even steal it, too.
You know what's really funny about the Knicks going against the Pacers? You know, like, the kind of player that they were missing in that series? Was, like, a center that played defense. Kind of like a Julius Randle.
And a Hartenstein?
And Hartenstein as well. The guys that they got rid of.
It's funny, though, when you talk about that. You talk about that trade to bring it up, though. But, like, in hindsight, like, did either team really lose the trade or win the trade? Because they both made it to the conference finals at that point.
I don't know, dude.
I mean,
a couple years.
It's one of those trades where it's like, was it best for both teams? Because I personally didn't understand the trade when the Timberwolves traded Cat, because I'm like, hey, this is kind of one of your like generational players. Julius Randle's kind of been around the league, but at the end, it looked like it was way better for the Timberwolves. And then, you know, then for the Knicks, like, I think Cat was a little bit of a difference maker in some of those early, you know, parts. But I don't know. It was interesting to me reflecting on that trade as, hey, they both went to the conference finals.
If this is the beginning of Julius Randle going on like a nice little tear, man, that's going to be really nice. They just have to worry about the Thunder and everyone else that's tooling up in the West, because it's going to get wild.
I mean, the West is deep. I mean, we know. If he comes back from the blood clots, you know, Wimby's going to be there. The Spurs are going to be there.
He'll be back.
Who knows who's going to trade for Giannis if he's going to get moved? San Antonio, Houston are probably the two most likely.
Yeah,
I've even heard the Warriors try to sneak their name in there to go one last shot with their core of guys.
I don't want to see one of the Warriors.
I don't want to see that either.
I'll sell my soul to see that not happen.
I think Houston's probably more likely to try to pull it out. I mean, I think San Antonio, and we haven't even talked about it. We've been off to the air, but Popovich basically retiring. We kind of brought that up, that he was done a while back, but now he's officially done. I think their motto has always been, they've never really traded for a superstar. I mean, they've never ever gotten one really to go there that I can remember off the top of my head. They've traded for solid veterans in the past, but they got Castle, which won Rookie of the Year, I think. Wimby, Fox. They get the number 2 and the 14th pick and some other depth there. To me, keep those guys and try to build up like the Thunder have, right? I mean, you can be there. You can compete. You can get to a conference final. I mean, I think the Nuggets are a team that's got to add some more depth to their team. Adelman getting that coaching job too. So we'll see. But I think Houston's most likely to trade for Giannis.
If there's one thing that the Knicks do to try to – because let's face it, it's all matchups, but really they should not have gone out of the first round. What's one thing that they changed? Because now that they're in the Eastern Conference, a lot of their fans are not happy that they didn't make the finals. But honestly, it was already a good run. They should be happy with the year already. But should they go after a different coach, another player?
I mean, they need players. They need depth. I mean, Tibbs, I mean, Jason could touch on this too. Even with the Bulls, I mean, it was always Dang and Rose and all those guys playing big minutes, and then they would wear down against a deeper Miami team. Starting five, they were just as good, but they just, you know, there's always talked about him running these guys in the ground, right? I mean, there's always been that talk about practice hard. You know, Jimmy Butler kind of came up in that system. A lot of these kind of newer guys aren't big on that. Cat obviously was there when he started out, I think as a rookie there with Minnesota with Tibbs. So yeah,
that was the infamous Jimmy Butler like Cat thing. I think you're right, Aaron. But I think it's less about the practice hard and stuff. I think it's more just what you said. It's the overall what's your going to be your usage when it gets down to crunch time. Where if you can only play me against seven guys, and I'm just going to rotate, you know, 10 to 11 out of this game and get minutes out of people that are going to be more fresh and keep others fresh. I think it's a difference maker when you get into some of these long series and a couple of those players that are deeper in the bench that, hey, we're not talking about. It's going to be one of those free agency moves or one of these draft picks that no one's ever going going to remember, but all of a sudden, like, oh yeah, this guy's really good. Like, he's the ninth player on their bench, but he's a big impact player.
This year's playoffs has broken any conventional method of like how you do NBA teams in the playoffs. You usually shrink down the roster down to your best seven guys. The two last teams now 10 and 11 deep. It is pretty amazing with no like crazy egomaniac front and center. Both guys share the ball. Pretty friendly teams. Great camaraderie.
I think we got to the seven-man rotation when we kind of went to super teams, right? I mean, even I started thinking back, even if you go to the Bulls team of Jordan, Phil Jackson still would play 8, 9, 10 guys. I mean, they had depth. Even if you go to the Lakers teams, too, with Phil Jackson there, I mean, you had, like, Robert Horry. You'd have a Rick Fox. You know, Derek Fisher, I don't even think, started early in that dynasty. They'd have guys that come in, give you solid minutes. And depth's always been, like we've talked about, Jason said, I mean, you get in a 6-7-game series, you've got to play guys because guys get banged up. I mean, and also you got to have role players continue to contribute, right? Josh Hart was terrible in that Eastern Conference final. He gave the Knicks nothing. They bumped him from the starting lineup, pinned him with Mitchell Robinson, and he was balling. He played really well. But you could see he was a big guy not used to playing 40 minutes a game. So by the fourth quarter, he was out of gas, right? I mean, he was just basically huffing and puffing. Towns, he's a good offensive player. He's a good rebounder, but he makes a lot of stupid, silly fouls, just dumb stuff. He kind of forces things, kind of complains to the officials, and you can get in his head. And even Tibbs, I think he cost them game two when he sat him out like 9 minutes in the fourth quarter. I mean, he was the hottest thing going offensively in that game. They need to get a point guard. We talk about what the Knicks need. They need to get a backup point guard. I mean, Brunson, love him, good player, but you saw what Indiana did. They just bodied him up. And he wore down. I mean, you could see it. He just wore down.
You know, one thing I didn't like about the Knicks was Brunson's usage. He just held the ball too long a lot of times.
I think that's how the lineup kind of, or the way they play kind of go, is he needs the ball in his hand, and it's really wearing it down. Who is he supposed to go to? I mean, is it supposed to be that time for Cat? But that, I think he was really owning it offensively for the team at that point. But Aaron's right. I think just wearing down, if you got to be responsible on both ends of the court and you got the Pacers really throwing tons of different guys at you, it's going to be a lot in these long playoff runs. I mean, I don't want to get into hockey right now, but I'll give you my only comparison. During the Blackhawks run, you have six defensemen on the roster, but they, during their dynasty, they always played three. And so they're having three guys just out there at all times playing like 30, 35 minutes a game between Duncan Keith, Brett Seabrook. I know I'm bringing hockey names up, but it was like the biggest thing every year is like, hey, I can't play six defensemen in the finals. I'm always got these three guys running ragged. And that's why their careers ended early.
Did I send you that Blackhawks like throwback video? It's like, oh, back when Chicago was like up in, you know, it was like some black guy's like, oh, the Blackhawks got black guys like hockey now.
No, you sent me that. Yeah, it's a pretty famous video out there.
Dude, I love that. It was a really sick highlight video. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back,
I want to get one thing in because I think we're going to switch sports here. The biggest news of the NBA during our time off. I want to talk conspiracy theories, Rome. We talk controversy, our old show, controversy segment.
Yeah.
Your Lakers got the most lopsided trade in NBA history. Was it rigged that, hey, we send Luka over to LA and the Mavericks get the first overall pick in the draft with like 0.09% chances of getting it, and Nico Harrison gets saved out of nowhere? Was this orchestrated from the front?
You know, I forgot about that. It really fucking pissed me off, actually. It's fucking infuriating.
Because now, I mean, look, it's a fabulous trade now for Dallas.
I mean, you get the number one overall pick. You get Anthony Davis, which whatever's left of his prime. I don't know.
I think Cooper Flagg is really, really good, and he's going to be like the next superstar. So if he's as good as advertised and he's like the next, you know, hopefully Ant can like claim that before Flag does, but, nah, man, it's not gonna be good. I'm not liking it at all.
Yeah. I mean, Dallas definitely got bailed out.
Someone did an analysis, by the way. Every time there's like a big trade that happens, that team that gives up that superstar player, they always happen to win the number one pick in the draft the following year.
That's what I'm saying.
It's happened time and time again. And it's just like,
It almost happened. San Antonio almost got the first pick again. Could you imagine Flag with Wimby?
Oh, dude.
I mean, we're talking about AD. I mean, that's already, but, you know, how much more does he have left? And then you got Kyrie's going to be out till, what, January?
Yeah.
I think they're going to do the Lakers a favor and trade Gafford to the Lakers. That's who's going to be one of their big guys. I think, you know, Nico's going to throw your boy Rob Pelinka a bone and say, here, have Gafford. I don't need him no more. I got Cooper Flag. But honestly, yeah. Honestly, I'll straight up give you a take. I would trade Lucas straight up for Cooper Flag. Screw the other guys. I would just do that straight by itself. The salary implications, Cooper Flag is going to be better than Luca, and you're saving money, and you get out of that contract. Yeah, he's going to be better.
Possibly. Let's not go there yet. It's going to be pretty epic, man. I can't believe that happened, though. We'll see. Yeah, when's the draft?
It's right after the finals, right? Isn't it like
probably 2 weeks after? Yeah, maybe a week.
Someone was throwing around like these trade rumors, like, oh, these are trades that Dallas could not like entertain, at least for the number one pick. And I was like starting to peruse.
Well, they already said they're not moving the pick.
Yeah, I mean, the only way is if Cooper Flag doesn't go to the draft for some random reason, which I don't think is happening.
You know, he looked really disappointed when Dallas won the first pick.
I think he's shocked, honestly.
He's like,
I think when he probably thought of plausible destinations, he was looking at DC, Utah, maybe Philadelphia. Philadelphia was in the mix. I think they got the third pick. And you end up in Dallas, which nobody saw coming. I mean, the celebration that Nico and those guys had, I mean, all those people that basically brought the coffins and Barry Nico, they're begging for tickets now, and they got to pay the 8% increased cost because now they're going to sell out again.
I will tell you, we're burying Rome, Aaron, on this whole Lakers thing, but I don't have the stats in front of me. But there was something, though, that the Bulls beating the Lakers on that half-court shot, if they wouldn't have hit that shot and won that game, the Bulls actually would have been in the draft position where the Mavericks were and would have gotten the first overall pick.
Thank you, LeBron, for throwing that game away.
Yeah. Well, thanks, dude.
Go ahead and draft Bronny again, Lakers.
Yeah, we'll take a quick break. Bronny's actually playing pretty good. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Some NHL. All right, we are back this time to cover the Stanley Cup. Hell of a playoffs as well. I got to admit, I haven't watched too much, just mainly highlights, but I have been following Edmonton pretty closely since they beat the Kings. I thought the Kings should have won that series, but they've been on a roll since then, taking care of the Vegas Knights 4-1. I really liked Vegas as well, took care of them, and then took care of Dallas in five games. So a couple of gentlemen sweeps. And Florida, man, they've had a couple tough series, first against Ottawa, then Toronto, and then they took care of Carolina pretty easily in five games. But Jason, I'll revert to you if you want to give us a quick recap on the Stanley Cup playoffs, what you think of Edmonton and Florida meeting again. This is the third time, right? Third year in a row. A couple little mini dynasties growing here. You got some rivalry. Like, I think it's great for hockey to have this.
Yeah, third year in a row for Florida, second year for Edmonton, back to back, kind of the Stanley Cup rematch. I'm not sure which pod got recorded and whatnot that, but I will say this has kind of been my feeling all along that there was going to be a Stanley Cup rematch. Florida just. They were pacing their regular season, similar to be their cross-state rivals, Tampa Bay, who went on a good Stanley Cup run, you know, half a decade ago, won several cups. And we're kind of doing the salary cap manipulation game where you put your players on injured reserve. They don't count against the cap, and then you bring them back.
That's crazy how you do that.
Yeah, so Tampa was notoriously doing that during their run, and Florida dipped into that this year. So coming out of, you know, the Four Nations Cup, Matthew Tkachuk was hurt. They put him on injured reserve, and then they're able to kind of clear that money, which allowed them, the Florida Panthers, that is, to go get Brad Marchand from Boston, which is kind of one of their big rivals. And Marchand, just, you know, big all-time player for the Bruins franchise, has had huge impacts in the playoffs. It's kind of like
killing it.
I don't want to say it's, yeah, I don't want to say it's like the, it's not like getting a Yankees Red Sox player to cross rivalries, but a little bit was, because this Florida team really was in a rivalry against the Bruins. So you're getting, you know, one of your enemy's guys, you know, that you're adding to basically be a third line, fourth line player that was kind of like a front line starter for Boston. And then, okay, cool, we'll add Kachuk and all these other guys back from injured reserve in the playoffs. So I just felt there was something there for Florida that, hey, we got most of the core from last year and we're going to add a little more depth. And it just felt good. They vanquished the Tampa Bay in the first round. The most competitive series I was worried about was Toronto. And I had some friends like talking, like, and I was talking to him like, hey, if Toronto does anything, they choke when they should win. And that should have been Toronto's series. Go ahead,
Toronto, Ernie. What a disappointment they were, man. I mean, they got beat, what, back-to-back home game, 6-1, just embarrassed on home ice after winning the first two. Yep. Yeah.
Utter embarrassing. I think if you're looking at, if you're not a hockey fan, you could probably pair Toronto to your Knicks, because Toronto is supposed to be, you know, Toronto, maybe the center of the hockey world. It's where the Hockey Hall of Fame's at, where the Stanley Cup lives. But Toronto's had, like, you know, was this is the 40s since they won the Stanley Cup. It should be where they own hockey, and they just don't. Just like the Knicks is the mecca of basketball, and they don't. And Toronto, what they do, they just choke. And in that final game, Florida poured it on, and at that point, you just knew Florida was going to make the run. They got to play the Hurricanes in the Eastern Conference Finals, and they own the Hurricanes. Like, just they swept them 2 years ago, I think it was, to go in the finals.
Who doesn't own the Hurricanes in the Eastern Conference Finals now? I mean, they lost, what, 15 straight?
I think it was.
Before they finally won game four.
Finally won a game, but yes, they're just not good in the Eastern Conference Finals. Well, so... But yeah, Florida just inevitable to get there. I just felt like there was kind of unbelievable depth. And that's even with Matthew Tkachuk, even though coming back hasn't been great. You could tell he's not 100%, but hockey playoffs, we don't talk about injuries. You probably have a broken, you know, tibia, and you're just going to still get out there and roll it. We'll talk about it after. So I think Florida just, they got their little mini dynasty right now. And then on the other side, Edmonton, I just think Edmonton has just had a sour taste in their mouth since last year. And all season, I'm like, this team is pissed off. Leon Draisaitl, like, had a terrible final last year, and he is coming back with a vengeance this year. McDavid, best player in the world. I was listening to another podcast where someone called him the best athlete in the world. No one wants to give hockey players the best athlete, but I think McDavid, what he does on the ice and how big and fast this guy is just at another level. And really, it's just going to be, can goaltending kind of hold up for them? It's always a hit or miss on the goaltending side for Edmonton. It's like shutout, or they give up 3 or 4 goals, whatever it might be.
But they are too deep there. I mean, they are too deep at goalie with Skinner and was it Pickard?
Yeah. So, but Skinner's had some great games throughout there too, especially in that Golden Knights series. So, but I going into it, I think that it's been a great playoffs. I think the Jets, going back to other teams, Jets hugely disappointing. You know, Hellebuck just was not good. You know, in that Blues series was super questionable, and going 7 games. I don't even know which podcast we talked about it. But that Blues Jets game 7. Double overtime, I think it went, was incredible. But the Jets were just spent after that first round, pretty much got owned by the Stars. I like the Golden Knights. But I think the Oilers were just inevitable. I think this was an inevitable final as much as there was other good teams. But I'm really excited for this final, just like we are for the NBA finals, because I think Edmonton really, even though they lost in Game 7 last year, when they came back and forced the Game 7, there was just something
down, right? 3-1 or was
3-0.
It 3-0, that's right.
3-0. And then it came back to 7. Florida almost blew it, got the cup. But I think the motivation for Edmonton was, like, if they would have taken any of those early games, which they should have, they would have won last year. And I think I think Edmonton knows they're better than Florida, and they should have won last year. And Draisaitl didn't play great, and they're going to be a lot of people coming to prove Florida, they're great. I'm not going to do that, but with Tkachuk not 100% and some other things, I think this is where you get the back and forth. Edmonton gets their revenge this year, but I think it's going to be a violent close series
for sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to agree. I mean, it's been an interesting playoffs. I mean, Florida, Toronto had them down 2-0. You go to game three, Florida comes back and wins in overtime that game three. They looked like they were going to go up 3-0. Maybe that's why the Panthers got Brad Marchand, because now he is, what, I believe 5-6-0 in series is against Toronto, dating back to his days against Boston. So maybe he was a secret link there. Rome, you touched on it. Edmonton versus the Kings. They've eliminated them four straight years in round one. The Kings were up 2-0. Similar. We're about to go 3-0. We're about to sweep Edmonton. I mean, they were the better team in that series. And then in the third period, they just got destroyed. Kind of basically didn't play aggressive, played, you know, back on their heels. And Connor McDavid, Draisaitl, all those guys came through, got it going. We're not even talking about the legend, Corey Perry. I mean, what he's doing, this is what his sixth final Stanley Cup final in the last 5 years. He won it back the cup there of the Ducks. He's looking to get it going there again. And I agree. I mean, with Jason too, that Edmonton last year, I think they were a little tense, a little nervous getting to the cup for the first time. Florida had that the year before. They came in more loose. They came in, skated faster, got the cup. I agree. I think it's a tough physical series, but I think Edmonton's depth gets them and Connor McDavid their first Stanley Cup in a while. I am worried, you know, with Zach Hyman going out with that injury, that kind of hurts them. He's been one of their physical enforcers in these playoffs. He's been good. But I think Edmonton with McDavid, Draisaitl, Skinner, he might give up five goals, two games, but he'll do shutouts the other ones. I like Edmonton in six.
Well, like Edmonton right now, they kind of remind me, I guess we're going to do the NBA parallel, OKC being on the ropes, you know, against Denver. You finally need to be put on the edge, then finally like something clicks, and then you wake up, and then you're on a fucking vengeance. And Jason, you know that they're definitely on a vengeance because they've been on a tear since then. One thing I found interesting when they both won their conference championships respectively, Florida did the same thing that they did last year, right? They did not touch the trophy because the year prior they did and they lost. So now they're still not touching the trophy. Edmonton's like, fuck it. We're doing everything to enjoy this ride. I find the different like superstitions really interesting for NHL.
Well, Edmonton, I believe, did not touch it last year, did not win it. So they're doing the reverse, kind of what Florida did the year before, the reverse. So, yeah.
Yeah, for Edmonton, it's interesting. Hockey on the compared to the other major professional sports has this almost nation rivalry within it too. And even though Edmonton, you know, may have a rivalry with Calgary or Vancouver or Toronto and stuff, there is a Canada versus US kind of parallel with this. And Canada, no franchise in Canada has won the Stanley Cup since 93 with the Montreal Canadiens. So there's a little bit of like, there's a little bit of the whole country is behind Edmonton at this point because you're going against the team from the Sunshine State where there's no ice, who has been to three state Stanley Cup finals at this point too. So I know Canada's probably pissed. They hated us in the Four Nations Cup. They hated us for probably political reasons at a certain thing. I think all Canada wants is to take home the Stanley Cup. And really, if you think back to the glory days of Gretzky in the 80s and where Edmonton, you know, holds a place in kind of hockey lore. And from McDavid's standpoint, this guy's trying to be one of the greats of all time. And when you're one of the greats, you have to win a championship at least once. And I think this, you know, at least it's the last thing on his resume that he doesn't have as he kind of tears through the record book. Because when we celebrated Alexander Ovechkin through the entire year and what he's done scoring and everything, but there would have been question marks on Ovechkin if he didn't pull that one Stanley Cup on. Now no one cares because he won the one Stanley Cup. McDavid gets this, seals his legacy. He can win more in the future, but got to get the one, and then he really cements who he is.
I have a quick question, Jason, for you. What's goals in high danger zone? What does that mean, really?
I'm going to be honest. I have zero idea, Rome.
I was just looking at stats for like both the teams. I want to talk about it.
I'm guessing it's in the slot.
Well, both teams were different. They're both lead the league, but I guess Edmonton's tops in the league for like high danger shots on goal, whereas Florida Panthers are first in the league goals in high danger shots. And I'm just like, what is that? I didn't get a chance to research it. I just have like a note here on my notepad, but that's all.
I've never heard high danger zone shots.
So. Yeah, I'll be honest, I have not either. So you stumped me on that. That one, Rome. I thought you were going to ask what is goals against average, and I would say, hey, that's the amount of goals that a goalie averages giving up in a game. But Yeah. You're going a little more.
That too. Rome's too, man.
Apparently, Rome's time off, he was also crunching hockey analytics at the same time too, which we did not know.
So funny thing, I told Aaron the other day, I was at a function. All I had time for was like looking at analytics and numbers. So I was already looking at NFL stats before this season started, and kind of got so stuck in like probabilities and wins and added value. Yeah. So pretty funny. Who do you guys got? Who's going to take it all?
I think we kind of spoiled it a little, but I'm going to take Edmonton in six.
Agree.
Aaron.
Edmonton in six.
Six is such a safe number. But yeah, I agree as well.
I mean,
I can see it going seven, though, and Marchand maybe taking a win or two away as well.
Depending how it goes, depending how well Edmonton playing, they might be able to get him out of there in five.
Hmm.
But I think it goes six or seven.
That'd be kind of cool to see, too. I wouldn't mind that.
But, yeah, I mean, Florida's got, like Jason said, they got four lines. They're solid. They got a lot of depth, but they're kind of banged up. Edmonton's been just playing really, really well. Dreisaitl, I mean, he's scoring. Perry, I mentioned, he's got six, seven goals. He's playing well. I mean, Hyman's injury kind of worries me a bit. But then you got Evander Kane, zero games in the regular season. He's been a stud in these playoffs. And then Skinner, I mean, he either gives up no goals or he gives up five. So, and then they got Pickard, who can come in, who basically got him through because Skinner was terrible against the Kings. They had to pull him. Then he gets hurt, you know, game two, I believe it was against Vegas there, against the Knights. They brought Skinner back. Game three, he gave up, what, four or five goals. That's the only game they lost in that series. But since then, he's been lights out. He's been great. I mean, Dallas was able to steal a game when they scored, what, five goals in that third period when they got three power play goals in like 6 minutes. They would have got swept. I mean, Dallas was clearly not on Edmonton's level. So I like Edmonton here in six.
Nice. Stanley Cup finals start Wednesday. Friday, Monday, I'll be able to catch all the games this time. It's kind of sweet. I'm kind of digging that.
On TNT, by the way.
Yeah. Do you like the coverage on TNT?
I do.
Yeah. Yeah. TNT does hockey really well. I'll say both ESPN and TNT do it very well. I've liked the split in the hockey coverage. I think they both have pretty solid studio shows. I think just TNT is kind of able to expand on what they did with the NBA. And now with the NBA going away, I think that is their pretty much premier sports property that they're going to have right now.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Me and Aaron were actually talking about the NBA on TNT, and it's like, it's really confusing of how, what's going to go down next year. And it's still like up in the air. It's really weird.
I mean, it's not up in the air. It's like, I mean, they're just going to be leasing the show. It's just a production show that's going to be on ESPN. So I don't know. I saw your man Bill Simmons. His hot take was that ESPN's going to mess up that studio show. But I disagree because I think these guys are going to be down in Atlanta doing this show, being rogue, probably talking crap about ESPN.
And I mean, they already are talking crap about them.
So it's like, I honestly think it's going to be entertaining as hell as long as the ESPN management doesn't say nothing. But I mean, I think this goes into a longer trend. I know I'm getting off topic here, but ESPN at this point, like, they make a little less original content, and hey, we're just gonna go buy the content. They buy McAfee, they're gonna buy this, you know. It's like, hey, something's popular, we'll buy it, put it on, and like, and whatever, we'll worry about it later. It probably lowers some of the costs and everything that they have to do, and they already know, hey, it's already know it's popular and it has an audience.
Yeah, I caught Dan Patrick earlier today. He's saying, like, you know, ESPN's not about journalism anymore, it's more about personalities and hot takes, and that's just the way it is.
I think a lot of shows, that TV production shows, are going hot takes for over journalism. I mean, Stephen A. Smith, that's what's gotten him $20 million a year. He just basically goes on there and rants about how bad the Knicks are playing defense and he can't take it anymore. Then he storms off. They go to commercial.
Yeah, they're not. I would say they're definitely not about journalism, because you're probably more alluding to the Around the Horn conversation. And, you know, that also happened when we were there, Around the Horn going off the air, which definitely was, you know, something of our era, especially for us in high school, getting out of school, watching Around the Horn, PTI, and the happy hour.
Love it,
man. That was the thing. It was great bringing back memories and watching that episode. But at the same time, I'll say they haven't been about journalism for a while, but I would say they're about hot takes. But really, ESPN got back to their core business. It's like, hey, we're just buying sports, and we're going to have every event possible on, and you can't have them all be, you know, all games all the time, but they probably just put as many games as possible and then have some of studio attachments with there that have it accompany the property. But like, I mean, I would say it's just, they're just generating content, and just where people, personalities that have audiences or shows that are popular, hey, we'll buy that and put that around our content.
Yeah. I mean, I expect that Inside the NBA to remain the same. I don't think ESPN is really going to get involved and say anything. I mean, the show's been going since '89. It blows their ratings out of the water. People want to see it. I mean, obviously, it's big enough to, like we've been talking about, ESPN bought it, said, hey, keep all your producers, keep all your writers, keep everything the same, stay in Atlanta, record out of the Turner studio, do what you want to do. I mean, these guys have been bashing ESPN for the past year. I mean, Shaq, Charles, you know, basically calling Kendrick Perkins a dummy. You know, Barkley saying, or Shaq saying, hey, we're not fucking around. We're coming. We're going to kick your ass. We're already better than you. So shut the fuck up and record our show and put it on your network because you guys suck. That's basically what they're telling them.
Yep. That's what he said on the second to last episode.
The one hidden thing I want about this is like, there's going to be an entertaining thing on there where just like, I think they could do a whole inside joke about this where like Stephen A's trying to get on the show. And they just never will put him on. Just like him pleading to be on the show and just like them just talking crap. Like, I don't want Stephen A on that show at all. But I think there's a good gimmick there where just like he's begging and pleading to be on the show because he needs to be on every show and they just keep him away. I think there's some good content there for Charles to just talk a lot of crap.
I could see them actually basically recording a video Zoom where he's begging and then they're throwing a clip on there with him just begging.
And then you know how they do their WWE memes? Skit?
Yeah, like they do their own little memes and stuff. Man.
All right, come on, Charles. You got to put me on.
Charles, come on, man. We go back, brother. We go back. You know, I would have liked to have seen, I'm glad the NHL's got, you know, on TNT, but I would have liked to see, actually, I know it never happens, the NBA, since it's TNT's last year, to actually give them the NBA Finals coverage and let their studio team and their announcers do it versus Mike Breen and those guys. They do a fine job, but I think that would have been a nice, even better send-off than just getting the Eastern Conference Final.
ABC paid that money, man. They ain't giving it up.
I know they weren't going to do it, but I know they weren't going to do it, but I would prefer to see it. But it's all money at the end of the day. So, and TNT's not going to, you know, reimburse them on it.
Yeah, I guess we'll see how it turns out. Charles Barkley was on Dan Patrick earlier. So he was talking about like how they might be on just like once a week, but they still have their own TNT show to do, but without highlights. So they're still trying to figure that out. So that's why I was like on top of mine. I was like, what's going on there?
Yeah, I think they'll figure it out. But at the end of the day, like if ESPN just wants viewers, you're going to throw this on. People gravitate with the NBA and where it goes. It's better there than I mean, I don't think it's been talked about, but you know, NBC is obviously the other portion of it. And I think Prime has
some games
too.
I'm really curious how NBC is going to do because I missed NBA on NBC. That's nostalgic for me.
They're going to have the round ball rock with John Tesh, you know, that rocking. And I guess they have Jordan out there. We're giving some takes, apparently,
like
that he's going to be on
takes?
Probably. Who knows? I mean, if you can get him away from the NASCAR track, man, generally he's over there with the 23 racing over there, you know, down in, North Carolina or whatever, where the race is for this weekend. But it'll be interesting. But I think overall, there's some good stuff bringing that studio show to ESPN. And I think the NBA will be a very interesting next year with the new broadcast partners.
For sure, man. It's going to be different. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk some racing and anything else that we missed. All right. We are back for a third segment, Source from the Sofa. We're going to talk a little racing this time, as there has been 3 F1 races since we last aired. I think we had a lost episode as well. Jason, as I mentioned earlier in the pod, he was at the Indy 500. And then we'll plug in some Premier League, too, for the final. But I don't know, Jason, why don't you tell us how was the Indy 500? Because that looked pretty cool.
The greatest spectacle in motor racing, man. You just talk about 350,000 people descending on the state of Indiana and Indianapolis. Incredible event, the pomp and circumstance of the pre-race. Rome, I don't know if there's a sporting event where you do God Bless America, America the Beautiful, and the National Anthem, and back home again in Indiana. Like, I'm telling you, we're pumping out everything.
It's like a concert over there or something.
That's a lot.
Did we get the patriotic feels of flyovers? But then we also had a Black Hawk helicopter going over the field of 33 as they made their way on the 2.5 mile track. So, I mean, just the pre-race festivities of the Indianapolis 500. It was just unbelievable. For me, brought back the childhood memories. I had gone to 10 plus or so Indy 500s, starting back to when I was an infant all the way up to my...
God damn.
Yeah, back in the day, man. It runs
in his blood, Rome.
Runs in my blood. I was there, second row from the track. I think, Rome, you saw some of the videos. Just did, feeling those cars going past you at 238, 340 miles an hour. Just incredible stuff. There was so many interesting things about that race. Number one was the weather. You know, you figure it's May here in Southern California. It's like 95, 100 degrees. I go to Indiana and it's 65 and about to rain. So looking at the forecast every day, man, I thought I was going to be wearing shorts and a t-shirt on this. Had to wear the jeans and bring a rain jacket like I was going to England last year for the British Grand Prix. So had to have that. Was clear skies, no rain, a little cloudy, but right about 30 minutes before the race started, the clouds started to set in a little more and it started to be a little sprinkle, and they delayed the race 45 minutes. Got the race finally started after about 45 minutes to an hour. They kept the drivers in the car on the front stretch, which was very interesting because, damn, like, I'm going to sit inside this car just waiting with my helmet on and everything.
That fucking blows.
Yeah, finally got the thing going. We're doing the parade lap, and Scott McLaughlin, who races for Team Penske, spins out on the parade lap and crashes into the wall. So before we even get the race started, we had a car out, and the pole sitter basically got three laps led because, okay, we didn't even do the official start of the race because someone... Now, Rome, your Indy 500 history, I was there. Arguably my favorite Indy 500 of all time. 1992, same thing happened. The pole sitter, Roberto Guerrero, spun out on the parade lap on the backstretch and crashed. Had the pole, spun out, never even started the race. So it happened before, same weather conditions. Was in the 60s, was rainy. So the tires, too cold, track cold, not getting any, you know, friction with the rubber down. That's what kind of was really the cause of it. And with that conditions, we had a lot of early cautions with some wrecks and stuff. Guys just couldn't get it going. But finally, the race kind of took form of its own. And Alex Palou, going into that race, had won four out of the five races of the season on the IndyCar schedule, was able to win the Indy 500, was the only missing thing from his resume. He's a three-time series champ, well on his way to become a four-time series champ. Was an incredible race. Cars kind of went out. We had Team Penske, comedy of errors. We didn't get to talk about it, but in the pre-race, a week prior in qualifying, you had two Penske cars disqualified during qualifying and were sent to the back of the field. And Roger Penske, team owner, fired the entire upper leadership of Penske Racing because of this basically second major rules violation for this team. And I don't want to get into a whole thing because we got a long racing segment here. But if you know, Roger Penske owns not just IndyCar team. He owns a NASCAR team. Roger Penske owns IndyCar itself. He owns the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So when you talk about conflict of interest, you have the owner of the racing series' team having illegal cars on the grid, which caused quite the controversy stir. So when we talk about conspiracy theories in the NBA, which I was throwing out there gladly, a lot of conspiracy theories in the motorsports world, as you have the owner of the series' cars cheating. So which is why he was so quiffed in firing the president of Penske IndyCar Racing, pretty much everyone involved with the illegal kind of part they had in their wing. And it didn't stop there for them. They had Joseph Newgarden was the two-time defending Indy 500 champion. He was going for the three-peat, would have been the first in Indy 500 history. He made his way. He started at the back because he was obviously disqualified in qualifying, made his way up from 32nd place, got all the way into the top 10, and then lost fuel pressure on the fuel pump and was out of the race. The McLaughlin car I mentioned, he crashed in the early parts, and then the third car ended up having. So Penske cars, which are generally dominant Indy, weren't there. But Alex Palou was able to pull that thing for Chip Ganassi Racing. Rome, you mentioned Kyle Larson, NASCAR series champion, really the racer's racer. This guy races anything. It was the second consecutive year he was attempting to do the 1100 double. For those wondering, that is racing the Indianapolis 500 mile race, then flying to Charlotte and racing the NASCAR Coca-Cola 600. It has been done several times, I think 11 different times. Only one person in history has done all 1,100 laps, and that was Tony Stewart. Finished top three in at Coca-Cola 600 and top six at the Indy 500 in the same year. It's the only person to do it, and an incredible result.
That's pretty dope.
It was dope. Kyle Larson, one of the best drivers in the world, really will drive anything. Didn't have a great May with the Indy car. He wrecked several times in the practices, wrecked again at the Indy 500, and then flew down to Charlotte and wrecked at the Coca-Cola 600.
Right in the beginning, so, right?
He got out early in the Coca-Cola 600 and then, you know, lost it and got into the wall. So it was not what we were expecting for. I was definitely cheering him on. I think he is one of the best drivers, but this guy just wants to race anything, and just the result wasn't there. I know he said, like, he's kind of done, doesn't want to do this again. If he does Indy again, it's kind of his post NASCAR career where he can kind of dedicate himself to the craft. But definitely was rooting for that, but didn't happen. Ultimately, I think this was an incredible event. I look forward to going again. Had a great time with my family. Just amazing experience. Just kind of feeling that, you know, those cars going past you.
Love it, man. Love the recap. Thanks for that. Let's switch to F1. I think since we were last in the pod, the lost pod, I think we covered Miami. That was definitely lost when Piastri took that one, Norris second, and then Russell. Emilia-Romagna, that was in the middle of May. Verstappen pulls out the victory. Norris second, Piastri third. Monaco, my guy Norris pulls out the victory. Leclerc gets second, Piastri third. So Leclerc is just always in the top three, it seems like, in every race. And then this past weekend, Piastri wins again. Like, how many? This must be like a lot of fucking wins, right? Like, is it normal for a driver to be having this many wins?
Was his fifth win?
So Piastri first, Norris second again.
Fourth or fifth? Like,
I think it's just fourth this year. But yeah, the McLarens ultimately coming out of this are just dominant. And one of these two guys between Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri is going to win the Drivers' Championship, and the team's going to win the Constructors. I think that's the most foregone conclusion that you come out in this. And the Spain race, Rome, I don't think this was in any of the lost episodes, but the Spain race was going to be this big thing because the rules were changing on the front wing. And this was supposed to limit what the flexi wing was kind of called.
Hamilton said it was stupid, right?
He did say it was stupid. Basically, it was an entire waste of money because all the teams basically had to invest all this time in changing it, and it didn't do anything because the McLarens were even faster this week and just totally just torched the field. They were thinking this was something the McLarens had an advantage over everyone, and they didn't. The cars were even better and even more dominant. So I think what we know on the F1 season so far is that McLaren has the best car. They're going to have the best car and win the Constructors back-to-back years. But now it's going to be a two-headed race for teammates on the Drivers' Championship between Lando and Oscar Piastri. And I'll say the emotions are kind of everywhere over these three races. So when you go back to Italy for what's probably the last race at Imola, this is kind of the last time they'll be doing that track on the circuit. And then, you know, Max Verstappen was fairly dominant in that race beginning to end, but Lando was able to kind of overtake Piastri in that as Piastri kind of going and had the points lead. Then you get into Monaco, and then Norris was able to have this dominant win. And I think going into the last pod, we were talking about, hey, Piastri at this point is going to own this Drivers' Championship if Lando doesn't put some results together, because he's not collecting the wins. He's not getting that aggression. So the dominant in qualifying that Piastri was had wasn't there, and Lando was able to get that in Monaco, which is basically, it's the glitz and glamour race, but it's the boringest race out of the year where there's no passing. Even the two, Aaron and I were texting, the two pit stop guaranteed didn't do crap. It basically was the same result.
It basically just delayed what we already knew was going to happen. Whoever won pole was going to win that race.
And Piastri wasn't great at Monaco either. That was the other thing where it's like, it was the first race. So like, he did, even though he finished third, he wasn't great. And then it was kind of like, okay, where's it going with Lando? Does he find his mojo? It's a super tight race. Now we get into Spain. The flexi wings there. The McLarens are dominant. And, you know, Piastri gets a good start, gets the lead, checks out. There we go. Verstappen had always one of the best, starts, gets ahead of Lando. Lando eventually overtakes him. Verstappen's running this three-stop strategy that no one else is running. So he's going back, tearing up through the field. I was talking to a guy today, and he's like, it was a pretty boring race until the last six laps. And I know for skipping to the end here. And then that's where it kind of went off the rails, where we had a late caution because Kimi Antonelli's engine blew up again. We'll get to that with the crappy Mercedes engine.
Yeah, what's going on with Mercedes, man? Let's get into it now. What is going on?
I'll tell you, generally when you're in the last year of specs for, you know, engine, everything around that comes to the technical regulations of the sport, engines usually don't blow in modern F1. But now we're in the last year of specs, and Mercedes is blowing engines left and right. And it is very concerning, I think, for what's going on at Mercedes, because this is the engine supplier that's blowing engines right now. So very interesting. I don't know, Aaron, but not good for that team. And basically,
like the last three or four races, I mean, they're always checking Russell's car, like, hey, a battery pack is going out. This is going out. Kimi Antonelli, he's, basically just cruising and goes into the gravel. Oh, his engine went out. Yeah, Mercedes got a lot of problems going for them right now.
They do, which is extremely interesting, because, McLaren's driving Mercedes engines, but they don't seem to have a problem with it. But the manufacturer themselves, a little bit of an issue. Especially, I think this is the second out of third race Kimi's car is blown up, because he blew up in Italy, too, which was his home race. So, yeah, I don't know what's going on there. They've basically regressed back to the pack in the constructors for second place, which has turned out to be a pretty interesting race. But going back to these final six laps, though, you had Kimi blow the engine. We get the field all bunched up. You get Piastri and Norris. Everyone decides to go pit. They're getting the whatever final tires you have. Verstappen and the Red Bull team put on hard tires, which was basically the tire you did not want to have.
Why pit there, Jason? I mean, you got the hard tires, which that sucked all week, and everybody knew they did. And not just keep going with – I think they were on the mediums, I believe.
They were on the mediums. They were a little worn. I forgot how many laps they had on them. I would say it wasn't a ton. I think at that point, I questioned it too, because you knew you were going to get passed by Piastri and Norris. Okay. But if you would have stayed out, at least you would have had the jump, eventually get passed by the McLarens in a couple laps, and probably still secures the third. But by going in, stays in third, gets Leclerc right on you with an inferior tire. And it's exactly what happened, is that he was in third on the restart. Before they even got to the start-finish line, he lost the rear end, lost all thing. Leclerc was on him, basically, and passed him.
Well, Leclerc went to the soft and just blew right by him.
Yeah, because I think it was a used soft, too. It was from qualifying or something. So it was a very poor strategy. I think Red Bull, there was a lot we'll say about Verstappen, but I think it was poor Red Bull strategy. You're Aaron, number one. Why pit at all? Stay on there. Let the McLarens pass you, at least buy some time where you're at, because Verstappen's a hard pass as is. But then you get back into this restart. Leclerc passes Verstappen. At the same time Leclerc's passing Verstappen, Russell goes and dive bombs in at the same time too. Questionable from Russell, 100% there. But then Red Bull tells Verstappen to give the place back, which is what caused basically the Mad Max incident where, okay, he's going to let Russell by. Rome, did you see this at all?
I only saw highlights.
Okay, well, what happened is the Red Bull team bosses say, hey, give Russell the place back, because they're in fear that
I didn't think he owned him this place.
I
thought the position was Verstappen's.
I thought so, too. I think it was borderline. And the only reason it was even borderline, I'll be honest, is because this is the Max Verstappen rule. It's dive bombing in, pushing your guy out, and then saying, like, he didn't give me the space, because that's what Russell did. So it was such a Verstappen move by Russell. And these two already freaking hate each other to begin with.
Yeah, going back to Vegas and everything last year, these two do not like each other.
So they already hate each other. And so I didn't think he needed to give it back. But Red Bull's being conservative, knowing because of the Max Verstappen rule, he may have to give it back. So they're making Verstappen give it back to Russell. They go into this turn. It appears he's giving him back. And then Verstappen seemingly just rams into Russell as he's making the pass. I don't know, to prove a point, like, hey, I'm still here or whatever. Gets a 10-second penalty that drops him from fourth to 10th. And then just storms off when the race is over. And it was vintage, I think, Max Verstappen. Because it's been crazy. I know you guys are a little new to F1. But this was Verstappen's MO during the 2021 famous duel between Verstappen and Hamilton. There was a race, I think Silverstone, where basically Verstappen crashed into Hamilton and took them both out of the race. So he had this reputation of, like, if I'm going, I'm taking you with me type thing.
Oh, okay.
And when Verstappen started having the dominant Red Bull the past couple of years, and he's just, 20, 30 seconds above everyone. He had the better car. Didn't matter. Everyone's like, oh, Verstappen has changed. No, he didn't change at all. He just didn't have to be aggressive and be one-on-one with people. He had the better car. So now that he's right there, I think a little bit of the old Max, or what the real Max is like, hey.
It's the real Max. The Mad Max.
Mad Max, yeah,
the Mad Max. Mad Max.
The Madman is back.
So he's back. It was great. It had some drama. I think if you look at the cool down room, some of those are super entertaining, and this one was too.
Yeah.
So you had Piastri, Leclerc, and Norris in that cool down room. And what I love about them is they'll show the race highlights. In an F1, okay, there's about 10 things that happen. So they're the highlights. They showed that clip, and all three of the drivers like look at each other like, what the fuck? This is what happened. And then Lando is just like, I've done that before. I did that in Mario Kart. And I'm just like dying, bro. Just like, you know, they couldn't like help resist of like, what the hell is this guy doing? Cause it's just like pure comedy of like, hey, this guy took a 10 second penalty, dropped him from 4th to 10th in the race. It was just utter insane. I think 3 weeks of F1, I think what we learned basically, McLaren dominant, but we're going to have a battle between Piastri and Norris. And it'll be interesting how the team plays it, because it's going to really come down to Saturdays. And for them to understand their own fate going into Saturday to get the favorable, basically, strategy is who gets the pole, or who's the ahead is going to get the favorable strategy. Because generally in F1, who has the better qualifying position gets the priority strategy. So this is where Lando, I think, has been losing to Piastri a little bit, has been on the qualifying. And that's where he won up them in Monaco a little bit better, obviously in Italy, but Spain was where Oscar kind of shined.
Oscar was really good in Spain. He was really good both qualifying practice. He was really fast. Verstappen, going back to him, even before this safety car came out, remember when they were, I think he was behind Lando there, he was in third. Remember, they were trying to pass, he was trying to pass a couple guys who they were lapping, and he got real pissed because they almost had a collision there and kind of in his way, and you could see him kind of like waving them off like, you fucking idiots, what are you doing? So he had a lot of buildup going into that pit, and then immediately you heard him right there on the intercom, like, dude, like, are we in the fucking hard tires? What the fuck are we doing on the hard tires? And then boom, like, Charles just came out past him. You got Russell, and then, like you said, basically a lap goes by. They're like, Max, you got to give the position back to Russell. What the fuck? You know, he's just going off.
I was still confused at this moment. I still think he thought Russell hit him from Leclerc hit him from behind, and why he lost the back end. And I'm like, and I know Leclerc did hit him right after the start finish line of the front stretch, because Max was trying to push Charles right into where all the used up rubber is off the racing line. And Max was trying to really push him to the right, but Leclerc kind of stayed veering him to get over to the racing line at. But I still think Max initially thought he lost the back end because he got hit.
Yeah,
because he was too wide.
I believe he did say he got hit.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, he hit me, he pushed me off. He said that. He was even eager once the safety car went off. He almost jumped and passed Piastri before Piastri even got going. He was like, and then he had to stop. And like, yeah, he was just real eager. He wasn't happy. I thought his comments after the race was basically like, hey, George, stop your crying. I'll bring you a box of tissue. You know, that's basically what he said. I think he came out on Instagram. I heard he apologized today and said there's no room for that in he was heated, and you know, again, I think he gets podium. I think he gets third if they just stay on the medium tires. Like you said, there was 6 laps left. Ferrari and Charles would have made a good push maybe to catch him, but it would have been tough. Obviously he would not have been in 10th. And then I know Jason, we haven't even touched on this, but he got 3 penalty points, and now he's basically a point away from being disqualified from a race. So that would basically take him out of the driver's championship. I don't think he has much of a chance now with McLaren doing what they're doing, but yeah.
Yeah, I would have said
Constructors' Cup. The Constructors' Cup is still, you know, debatable. They're still in it.
They're still in it there. I mean, it's a three-way for as much as I bash Ferrari the entire year. We'll get to more on where my guy Lewis was at this weekend too, but Ferrari's number two. Ferrari's second right now. So it's interesting with Ferrari, Mercedes, and Red Bull kind of where they're at, because we have some different results.
Well, Leclerc's been on the podium twice in a row. So
he has been. So, I mean, they've had, I don't think the car is great still. I think when you ask Lewis and some of these I still think he's getting used to the car. This whole year for Lewis, I was always going to question, because there is a difference between driving the Ferrari versus the Mercedes he's had the whole time, and it's the last year of these specs. He didn't get a ton of time in it, and so I still think there's some learning curve with Lewis in this car. But they had the second best car at the end of last year, and so I thought always Ferrari was going to maybe challenge McLaren a little more, but I don't think they have a shot. But I think you definitely have a three-way race here between Ferrari, Mercedes, and Red Bull. But you know, Yuki Tsunoda is basically doing nothing to help Red Bull at this point because it's all Verstappen on there. So
Verstappen.
More on him, and it's still, we've talked about it. It's crazy to me with the second Red Bull car how no one can drive what Verstappen drives in the second Red Bull, because you got Isaac Hadjer basically driving this the Racing Bulls car.
He's been
like
racing
better.
Well though, Isaac Hadjer. He's been racing pretty well.
And he's
got
great.
Like, a couple top tens.
He's ninth in the points right now. So
yeah,
like
he's been racing good.
He is the second, if you're going to say he's the second best Red Bull driver, I think the fear for him is like, because Yuki was having some good performances in that Racing Bulls car too. The expectations aren't as high, but there's something easier about driving that car versus where, you know, we talked about this before, that Red Bull car, the way it's set up for Verstappen on the edge, it just isn't there for some of these other guys, because Yuki hasn't been great in qualifying, just like Lawson wasn't. And Hazard's been great.
Lawson's a madman too, man. Him and Max deserve to be racing both in the Red Bull, man. I mean, that guy's all over the fucking track.
He is. I think it was Miami. He got into the Alpine, and he's like, "What's this guy here?" I was like, "He had the inside line. You just smashed into him." But
not only once, twice. But didn't he get him twice?
He did.
Came back around and got him again.
He did. But yeah, it was an interesting three. Set, I mean, yes, the Nico Hülkenberg for the Sauber, they've been basically the worst team on the grid the past couple of years. They got a fifth place out of this, actually passed Lewis on the last or next to last lap, which was a crazy kind of result for them. So it's been interesting with some of these results and where the second drivers are at and where you're looking at from a team's perspective, because you got Alpine right now last in the constructors. Aston Martin, who's been a solid fifth in the constructors the past several years, all the way down to ninth. Fernando Alonso in his home race, I think he managed ninth after the penalties and stuff, so was able to salvage something. But they've been pretty bad all year. So I think you have a very interesting bottom of the grid on these guys kind of getting some points. But man, it was a crazy 3-week sprint. Canada's up next in 2 weeks. I think you'll probably see Max have a more favorable performance at this track, because it's not the same, but I see some similarities as that in Imola for that Italian Grand Prix race. Got a long stretch, you know, some windy kind of turns, low speed in some areas, I think, where the Red Bull could be, you know, a little more effective than what some of these high speed tracks that like Spain, like there was some really high speed turns where the McLarens were able to make some distance out that I don't think the Red Bull was able to compete. So it'll be interesting, but I think you're watching Lando versus Piastri every week and seeing where's the mess up going to be between these two guys, because it's going to be a duel.
Yeah. So that was Piastri's fifth win of the season. The other four are split between Norris and Verstappen. They both won two apiece. And then, McLaren running away, double the points almost over Ferrari, Mercedes.
Now, what's going on? I've briefly saw, maybe you have more insight from the sources. What's going on with Lance Stroll? What's going on with the story there?
Lance Stroll.
I've heard conflicting things that it's an old injury. I heard maybe he broke his hand basically going nuts after qualifying. What's the real scoop?
I heard some of those too. I think we'll go off what they said. It was an old injury, and that maybe was affecting some of old Lance's performance. But I don't know what you're doing there, Aaron, but I don't even think it was really going to matter where he did the race or not, because they weren't going to score points with the car anyways. So,
but then they don't even get to replace him
I think there's maybe some validity to your second points at that point, because if his hand injury was that bad, why do they allow him to qualify?
I think his hand has been bothering him, and I think he aggravated it doing some stuff he shouldn't have been doing there in the garage.
It's quite possible.
Apparently he lost his temper.
Yeah.
It's possible, which is crazy, because I think you see from this guy doesn't show a lot of emotion when it comes to
Spanish.
No, he's Canadian.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So is he gonna be ready for the Canadian Grand Prix? I mean
that's what the prep was, but his dad owns the team, so you know, he gets what he wants at this point. You know, he is secure in F1 because his dad owns Aston Martin.
So we're basically not going to get the true story until we really dig deep into this thing.
I don't know if you ever get the true story, because when your dad's a billionaire who owns Aston Martin, the story is what they said, Aaron, and I'm going to believe that.
Okay. I'm gonna dig deep. I'm gonna have the sources dig deep.
All right, the sources dig deep. I think it won't matter. I think for Aston Martin, they said, I don't care about this season, and they have Adrian Newey, their guy they paid millions upon millions upon millions to over there designing the 2026 car. So I think there's something to be said for that. I think they have just basically thrown the flag on this season, and we're starting over next year.
I agree. And they didn't have a good weekend here at the Spanish. What happened with Williams? Team Williams, man. I mean, they've been racing well, but they did not race well this past week.
Yeah, really, really was weird, because I know we've been touting Williams all season. James Vowles, I think I've been impressed with his approach. I know if you watch Drive to Survive, I think Christian Horner takes some shots at some of these guys like James Vowles, who are really like the kind of the engineering nerds. They're not like swaggering team principals like Christian Horner or Gabriel, the guy for Alpine that's got all the controversy. And so Vowles, I think, really just understands like the details of the car and getting the car right and working within the resources they have. But yeah, this is really it was an off week for them. Sainz in his home Grand Prix, one of his worst qualifying efforts. Albon, they both lost wings in the start of the race, which is kind of crazy. I think they just basically said, we're not giving you a third wing, Alex. Just retire the car at this point. So I think disappointing for them, but I think for the most part, when you're looking at Williams, they have locked up probably the fifth in the constructors, because everyone above them is going to stay above them. And I don't think there's really a threat from behind. I think you'll constantly get this team, being in the, they'll probably be between 6 and 10 or, 6 and 12 and get some points at the bottom of the top 10 and continue to go. But yeah, I would say disappointing result for them.
Sweet. I think that wraps it up, right? 3 weeks, Indy, F1. We got a couple weeks break before the next race in Canada.
Yeah, we do. I mean, it'll be a busy summer with Canada, and then you have Austria 2 weeks after that. Great Britain, where I was last year for the in Silverstone for the British Grand Prix. Belgium. Some great tracks that are kind of coming up before the summer break at the end of July. So it'll be interesting where things are going. And then, I don't know, you probably want to start paying attention to the driver market here at a certain point too, because, what does Red Bull do with the second seat? Are they going to extend Yuki Tsunoda? Is Isaac Hasler going to be impressive enough to take that seat permanently? They have another young hotshot driver in Formula 2, Formula 3, and the Red Bull stable that was going to be on his way up. So what's going to happen with Yuki? And then what hasn't been announced yet, and I don't know how long they're going to wait, Cadillac's F1 team still yet to announce drivers and some of their key stuff for their maiden voyage in the F1 circuit next year. So it'll be interesting. I will give you, Rome, the rumored names, which I think are extremely likely, would be Sergio Perez and dropping the name, but he raced for Kick Sauber. He's Ferrari's reserve driver right now. The only Chinese F1 driver that was for Sauber last year. So a lot of rumors for those being the two guys for the Cadillac team, which to me makes a lot of sense. Because you would secure the Chinese market, and I'm sure a bunch of Chinese sponsorships, and Sergio Perez brings him all of Mexico and all the Mexican sponsorships that I think Red Bull was getting before. So with F1, it's not always being about the best driver in the world. It's, do you have an entire nation of sponsors behind you that can contribute to your fund to secure your seat?
There you go, man.
Fair enough. Makes sense.
Money Joe Blanu,
the
that's
world
what
go round.
Joe Blanu, that's what it
maybe,
is.
Maybe we get one of those guys to come on this show part time, and we get some of that sponsorship love going that way.
I mean, I think we got to find a drive. You had Kyle Pinto, in South America. Basically, that was kind of the thing that he kicked Jack Doohan out of his seat because he was getting the Argentina he's from. Yeah, they all the Marty from Argentina is paying.
Look how that's working. Look how that's working. At least Doohan could get 15th.
Yeah, at least that. But yeah.
This guy can't even get fucking higher than us on the goddamn poll.
Cool. Let's transition real quick before we wrap up the pod. It's been really cool catching up on NBA hockey and out racing. Champions League real quick. It was on this past Saturday. My first Saturday off in a very long time. It was really nice. Wasn't sure what to expect from the match. You had PSG against Inter Milan, and it was an ass whooping, like an epic ass whooping for the ages. Biggest victory in Champions League history. The previous was by 3 goals. This eclipsed
four goals,
it with
4 goals.
Four?
Yeah.
This was 5. And they were all beautiful goals. I thought like the first couple were just like, you know, pretty basic. This, you know, the guys on Inter Milan kind of fell asleep on defense, but the last few, man, they were all epic. Nice in the corner in traffic, beautiful passing. Aaron, I know you texted me that you were watching the game, which kind of took me off guard. I was not expecting you to watch the game, but
I'm a big Champions League guy. I do follow it, man. I mean, Rome, yeah, yeah. As you know, Jason knows. You know, I came up working in the construction, the field. All those guys were soccer guys. They got me in, you know, big Champions League guys. So I do follow it. You know, I'm not a hardcore, but yeah, I do watch Champions League final. I do keep an eye on it. Happy for PSG. They're one of my teams I root for. They've been close for a while now. You know, they try to go over the top when they sign Messi, Neymar, those guys. But now, you know, we talk about teams in other sports having depth. This is what PSG has. They have a lot of depth, a lot of team. They're really a team, not star driven. And just like you said, bro, they pitted on Inter Milan 5-0. Could have been 7-8-0, to be honest. I mean, that was the most one-sided soccer game I've seen in a while.
Yeah, you mentioned the team aspect of this. I'll be honest, I'm not following a ton of Champions League. I got into it when Bayern Munich was kind of rolling through, but they got bounced there. I think it was in the quarterfinals. But PSG, like you mentioned the names, the stars a couple years ago that they were getting with Neymar, and they got Messi, and I'm dropping the name. Who did they let go that went to Real Madrid this last year, which basically
was
Mbappe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, they had 3 of the best players probably in the world. And Mbappe was, you know, seen as one of the best, was rumored to leave PSG forever and go to Real Madrid and lose all 3 of these guys within the span, I think, of 18 months. And then you deliver one of the best Champions League seasons in dominant fashion, really from, I think, pretty much all the way from January till now. They were just really a force. And going through. So, like you said, I mean, I don't know. Is there parallels to the NBA we're driving, like the Oklahoma City Thunder? Like, hey, we just got the young core, no really big time star, and we're just going to really run through.
They seem more like Indiana to me, PSG.
Yeah, they're okay. Super young.
Because they really don't stars. Have. I mean, that one guy, I think he scored 2 goals. What is he, 19 years old? I don't know his name top of my head. But yeah, I mean, they got a great coach, manager. You know, he was part of that Barca team that won in 13-14 leading them. Just a really good team, man. A really good squad getting there. What they beat, I think they beat, what, Arsenal in the semi? And Arsenal had a really good team. You know, I think, Rome, I told you, I would have liked to have seen Barcelona versus them, but Inter Milan beat them in that semifinal and that classic where they came back, scored, and then in extra time, whatever, won. But Inter Milan was just outclassed from the beginning. I mean, you talked about the passing. It was pretty obvious to see 20 minutes in that this was going to be ugly.
Yeah, to be honest, like once my Liverpool went out at the hands of PSG, which I thought was bullshit, you know, going to the penalties, I totally checked out. So when I was told that
I think Jason's the only one that likes penalties, right? He's the only one that's for the penalty kicks.
Who doesn't like penalties, man? The drama,
I don't like it. Yeah. They need to kick penalties, that, like 5 more feet out.
Hey, you played 2 games. It's locked up. We don't need any more. Let's get the goal. Let's get the goalies.
Let's get the guys there. Yeah, no, I get it.
Hey,
you watch
the end of Mighty Ducks, right? Okay, I need the Charlie Conway, you know, drama shot, triple deke. You know, that's drama right there. That's pure sport.
I gotta rewatch the movie.
I gotta go back and rewatch too.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a soccer reference I could have done. I can't remember a good soccer movie.
The Big Green.
The Big Green's a good one.
I was gonna say Big Green, but I was like, are they gonna get on me for not saying Bennett like Beckham? Because I'll be honest, I never saw it.
I never saw that.
But Big Green, I did see.
I did rewatch it with my daughter like 3 years ago, and I was like, this is a very
I think it was sooner than that, but it was felt like we were
funny.
Talking about Big Green like a year ago. Maybe it was 3 years ago. Time does go by fly, but
No. I'll tell you the time to watch 6. Those was during the pandemic when Disney Plus pops up and you start watching the Big Green, or I introduced my wife to Heavyweights. She had never seen Heavyweights, and I was like,
Heavyweights.
When I really got into fitness, people were referring to me as Ben Stiller on that movie, and I'm like, what are they talking about? And then I was like, okay, I totally get it.
My thing for Heavyweights was the Ben Stiller character in Heavyweights, basically in the same character universe as his character in Dodgeball.
Yeah, basically, I mean, yes.
It's the same guy. He just went over.
That's good stuff.
I don't want to get all off the sport with PSG right now, but given this was this was their first Champions League title, right?
Yes,
finally got it.
They've had a few losses there.
I saw some think pieces on this and everything on the kind of the conflict in for sports fans around who owns PSG and everything behind it. So PSG was bought, I think, back in like 2011 by the Qatari government. And so if you looked at all of these Middle East countries that are basically using all of their funds from oil and other things to basically, they call it sports washing, basically, versus some of the cultural stuff between us and them. I think some of the English Premier League teams are kind of owned. I think Manchester City owned by some of that as well, too. What are your thoughts, I guess, on that, Rome? Just the different things with you having a government own an entire, major soccer, club for the world.
It kind of caught me off guard. I haven't really delved into that. I don't know. It's kind of weird, but
I saw it coming up, but I'll tell you, it's the same thing, because you know who owns McLaren? The Qatari government. So I would say there's a lot of sports right now that we
and they just had the World Cup too.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of sports that we have basically outsourced to the highest bidder in a lot of things, and some of our favorites basically are all owned. And I bring this to a bigger subject because this hasn't got to American sports yet, but you're waiting for the first like
hockey or golf.
Golf was the one. I think the NBA has a minority stake in maybe the Washington Wizards or something like that. So I don't know. It's been an ongoing thing where no, I guess, sovereignty of a country owns any of these American sports teams. But when you look at Formula One, you look at soccer, you look at golf, there is a lot of foreign governments like basically buying sports at this point. So
that's weird. I don't know. You'll see a lot more sports washing though, for sure.
So is next NIL for them? College football starting to buy their own basic university?
I mean, they could at this point. You never know.
I think that was the big issue with the PGA, or like a lot of the guys didn't want to take that oil money with LIV Golf, but LIV Golf isn't doing really great either. And now you see guys wanting to come to the PGA, but that deal of them merging those two leagues never happened. And, money talks, so a lot of guys just took it. But I don't know how that all, develops. Like NFL is being really careful of letting private equities now into buying minority shares. You're definitely going to probably see some sports watching NFL at some point. NBA, if they open up a European division, it's going to get pretty tricky coming up.
It is, especially as you start, we talked about the NFL, you've gotten these franchises and things so expensive that you're really outpricing a lot of like, hey, you're not getting an owner right now buying this thing for about $10 million. All right. You have to
those days are gone.
You have to be a billionaire and then have other billionaires investing with you. And as rich as this world is and all the billionaires we have now versus, a generation ago, there's only so many that can buy all these clubs. I find very interesting what Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhinney does for
amazing
for Wrexham. I think Eva Longoria is buying a Mexican soccer team, and I think Kelsey has got into it. So I think now there's a niche in it where these athletes or other people are just, hey, we're gonna buy a low level team, use our celebrity, get TV stuff going on with it, in different ways to like enhance a brand and image, and then kind of to cultivate this thing that's probably smaller, because Wrexham, right now was what, on the fourth division in English football, and now they're I forgot what the set one away from the Premier League. That they've turned this thing into what was a couple million dollar investment for those guys into something that it's probably turning into like a $1 billion team eventually if they get some sort of stadium and other stuff that goes into it.
Yeah, they're the first team in history to advance up a division 3 years in a row. It's never happened before. It's been really impressive. So yeah, they're definitely get their money back and some.
Yep. Just interesting stuff. World of sports and money kind of colliding, I think, more than ever before. But, you know,
props to follow the money, man. The paper trail.
We got to get into buy a pickleball team or a softball team. That's what we get.
I don't care. I don't care what Steph Curry and all these guys stuff. That stuff's not taking off. All right. Pickleball
is not.
No, it's not.
It's dead.
Not
it's dead,
off.
Man. Yeah. Just like someone COVID is gone, man.
Yeah.
Dude, you can't say that. No Kobe dead jokes.
I wasn't going there.
You said COVID.
Oh.
Yeah.
Jesus. God damn it. All right, never mind. COVID. COVID's not dead. Still around.
It's been around for 100 years. Go look at the old Lysol bottles. Kills COVID.
All right. Is that it, guys?
Well, I mean, do we have the MLB baseball preview on the docket yet? Or
I don't care about baseball preview. What's going on in wrestling, man? Anything new?
Oh, wrestling.
I don't care about MLB preview. Who gives a shit about that?
Okay. I mean, wrestling, you know, we have the Money in the Bank pay-per-view this weekend out in L.A. at the Intuit Dome. I'm not going this weekend. No, I'm still on the high of WrestleMania. But also, I'll tell you, speaking of money, the TKO Group and WWE making it a little pricey to go to some of these events. Now, I think the cheapest ticket is $1,000 to get into Intuit Dome this weekend for the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. So
that's crazy.
We got a big tag match, Aaron. We got John Cena, the WWE champion, teaming with YouTube sensation Logan Paul against former WWE champion Cody Rhodes and world heavyweight champion Jey Uso in kind of a big tag match. So we got that. And then the two Money in the Bank matches where if you climb the ladder and secure that briefcase, Aaron.
Oh, is that the one?
You get a guaranteed title shot anytime, anywhere for a champion of your choosing. So big stakes coming out of that, because generally coming out of that, a new star is crowned, because pretty much 90% of the time, the cash-in is successful, and you're going to be launching potentially a new star.
Who's in that fight?
Well, we're still figuring out some of it. I will say on the men's side, we have Seth Rollins, who won the big main event in night one. Yeah. You have LA Knight, who has been kind of a rising star in that. I'm trying to think who else we got. And there is Monday Night Raw was going on tonight. I haven't finished it. There was a qualifying match with CM Punk inside that match as well, too. So some big names that'll be kind of in that match. The women have some big names in there, too. But, we'll see. Could be launching a new star here.
Interesting. All right.
All right.
We'll keep tabs. I'll have to check it out. That's Saturday night, Sunday
night?
That is
Saturday night on Peacock.
What time?
I believe it's 4 p.m.
Okay.
I think it's early.
Are you going to watch it?
I might put it on because the UFC starts at 7, so I can go from the WWE to the UFC motion right there.
That's generally what the TKO group will have, is they own both WWE and the UFC. They put the WWE pay-per-view at 4 and then transition right into UFC. Hey, we're selling everything, and it's a double action for the TKO group on most of these Saturdays. So I will tell you,
NBA finals that day.
It could be. Aaron, I will tell you, as big a wrestling fan as I am, and I talk
there are
about
no NBA
one,
finals on Saturday, Rome.
Oh, I think the NHL Sundays. Finals. The
NHL's Friday.
Oh.
Wednesday, Friday. Saturday's an open night, boys.
It is an open night.
TKO group knows what they're doing.
Oh, they know. They got
don't
it
mess
unlocked.
With Dana White and those boys, bro. They know what they're doing.
That's all right. Well, Aaron, I was saying, I love wrestling. There is a lot of wrestling because we are popping up premium live events every which way. We got Money in the Bank. We got coming down the road. We got another Saturday Night's main event on NBC. They're doing an all women's pay-per-view out in Georgia that same weekend, along with an NXT.
Is that why you're out in Georgia so long, Jason? You were sneaking off watching those pre-wrestling and getting all scouting.
No, that's all right. It happens to be where the event is at.
Okay.
You know? So I don't
know. I don't
but
know.
If I do have to go to Georgia, maybe that weekend was there because it was in town for the, one of the Rocks returns last year that was in Georgia during that time. But I did not go to that event. But got a big summer of wrestling coming up. But there's a lot of wrestling, a lot to keep up with right now. And you know we're in a busy season. We got NHL, we got NBA, we got Formula One. Rome didn't even let me talk NASCAR today.
Well, you talked Indy. Oh, it's over.
Rome,
save that for what, Thursday or
any given,
whatever
any given Sunday, Rome. I could have Formula One at 7 a.m. I have IndyCar at 10 a.m. and I got NASCAR at noon. I mean, that's a full Sunday of racing.
It sounds like your engines are revved.
It is a lot of racing.
It's amazing. Yeah.
I mean, I did watch. You know, I'm just glad I get to sleep in on a Sunday because I haven't done that in 3 weeks.
I need to, you know, well,
you know, yeah, up 5:45 a.m. three straight Sundays. That's a record for me. So I'm glad I get to sleep in, and then the Canadian Grand Prix I think starts at 11 when that gets going. So get a few weeks to recharge the mind there and the body on a Sunday.
They are in our hemisphere. I guess what you're saying is the MLB preview has been pushed off to July or something like that.
Sounds like it.
Basically, okay. Yeah. Basically,
All-Star weekend, maybe.
I mean, a short preview is you know, the Dodgers try to buy everybody, and we'll go from there. Story to be continued.
Only two games Shots up on the Padres. Taken. Only two games up on the Padres, though. So Shots even taken. Buying everyone, they still can't win.
Have you seen their injured list? It's every pitcher that they signed. It's crazy. It's 10 guys on there, I think.
Yeah, that's every year,
man. Right now, their best healthy pitcher is Kershaw.
It's like every year. It's always like, what's the pitching curse in LA? I just wanted to find out like what that is, because no matter who they sign, they get hurt.
You're here complaining about pitchers getting hurt. The poor Rockies, man, only got 10 wins right now, and we're in June.
I'm really happy they finally got the 10th win today. I'm really happy for them because it's a nice number, 10. 10 and 50.
10 and 50, yeah. Perfect round number of terribleness.
Perfect round number.
They are bad, man. That is a bad team.
They are putting your White Sox record.
Oh, they make the White Sox look really, really good
last season.
I can't even have one thing. I can't even have the worst team of all time.
You can't
next
even have
year,
the worst team,
they're,
dude.
They're taking it away from me, man.
Yeah, it's crazy.
This team can't even hit in Coors Field. You know, remember when it's just the balls were just flying out of Coors Field left and right? Larry Walker, Vinny Castilla, Dante Bichette.
This team's only
scored
190 runs all season in Colorado.
Yeah, they're bad.
I think they're on target to be outscored by 500 runs, which would be an all-time.
I think they're already minus, 190 or something in run something differential. Like that, yeah, it's bad.
183.
Yeah, it's bad.
Wow. As bad as my White Sox are this year, they only got a minus 64, guys.
What
they
is the White Sox record?
They're 18-42.
Not bad.
I mean, it's better than 10
and 50. Better than last year?
I think we're better than last year. Yeah, we're better than last year.
Apparently. They seem better, more competitive.
Yeah, so good that I'm going to actually go to some White Sox games this year. They're winning. They won like three more games, so I believe in them.
Where'd you go? Where are you going to go to game at?
I'm going in July. I got a few trips scheduled with some family and cousins, and I'll be taking in a weekend of White Sox games twice in July. I'll be going to the crosstown White Sox Cubs series at the end of July.
That'd be sick, actually.
So yeah, I'll be out there twice in July.
Nice. All right, that will wrap it up. This is a very long pod.
We said it would be. I mean, me and Jason said it would be.
Yeah,
I said 3 hours. Aaron said, I think we can do it in like 180 minutes-ish, but that's, I don't know. That's 2.5. We did less.
Not bad, actually. Yeah, no, it's good. Pretty average. We could have definitely gone longer, I think. We're back.
We're back.
Source of the sofa, we're back.
Rome's back. That's more important. He's back, guys.
We're back at the internet.
Aaron and I have been here the whole time. We were just waiting for Rome to turn the recording light on.
Yeah. I got internet now in the new place.
Had no internet. Was in a retreat in the darkness. But he's back. Rome is back.
I was meditating. I was concerned because in the group chat of the show, I there was nothing. And then Aaron would just say to the side, like, hey, can you record? I'm like, well, I can record. Are you executive producer now, Aaron? Are you coordinating this thing or what?
I got some kind of producer role, but I don't know what that really entitles, to tell you the truth.
Entitles sending me a check. That's what it titles. So, that's the executive producer role.
That's great if I got a check myself to send you a check, but unfortunately, I've yet to receive one too.
All right,
maybe I get bought off by a government, and then I can see what I can do for you there.
Yeah. Let's see if we can do something Friday. I think
Friday would be good, right after game two of the hockey. That'd be good. Yeah, recap the two games and then the NBA one after Thursday. Yeah,
that works for me. Friday night. I'm not going out for a long time. I'm catching up on sleep from the last 3 months. I haven't slept. All right. Peace out, everybody. Source from the sofa. We'll be back.